ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः।
Krishan chapter 7 verses 4 to 8.
Bhumi kapo nalo vayuhu, Bhumi kapo nalo vayuhu, Kammano buddhi revacha, Kammano buddhi revacha, aham karayiti yammi, भिन्ना प्रकृतिरष्टधा भिन्ना प्रकृतिरष्टधा भूमिरापो नलो वायुः कं मनो बुद्धिरेव च अहंकारेति यम्मे भिन्ना प्रकृतिरष्टधा अपरेयमितत्वन्याम् अपरेयमितत्वन्याम् प्रकृतिं विद्धि मे पराम् प्रकृतिं विद्धि मे पराम् जीवभूता महाभावो जीवभूता महाभावो येदं धार्यते जगत् येदं धार्यते जगत् अपरेयमितत्वन्याम् प्रकृतिं विद्धि मे पराम् जीवभूता महाभावो येदं धार्यते जगत् एतद्योनीनि भूतानि एतद्योनीनि भूतानि सर्वाणि च्युपधारय सर्वाणि च्युपधारय अहं कृष्णस्य जगतः अहं कृष्णस्य जगतः प्रभवप्रणयस्तथा प्रभवप्रणयस्तथा एतद्योनीनि भूतानि सर्वाणि च्युपधारय अहं कृष्णस्य जगतः प्रभवप्रणयस्तथा मत्तपरतरं नान्य किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय मयि सर्वमिदं प्रोक्तम्
मयि सर्वमिदं
प्रोक्तम् सूत्रे मणिगणा इव
सूत्रे मणिगणा इव
मत्तपरतरं नान्य किञ्चिदस्ति धनञ्जय मयि सर्वमिदं प्रोक्तम् सूत्रे मणिगणा इव रथोऽहमप्सु कौन्तेय रथोऽहमप्सु कौन्तेय प्रभास्मि शशिसूर्ययोः प्रभास्मि शशिसूर्ययोः प्रणवः सर्ववेदेषु प्रणवः सर्ववेदेषु शब्दस्के पौरुषं नृषो शब्दस्के पौरुषं नृषो रथोऽहमप्सु कौन्तेय प्रभास्मि शशिसूर्ययोः प्रणवः सर्वदेवेषु शब्दस्के पौरुषं नृषो।
Pursuing apparently a variety in the world, each individual may, from the superficial level if you look at, it appears that they are pursuing different things. But if you question what are they actually pursuing, through the apparent different things that they are pursuing, you will come to the conclusion that everybody is pursuing only one thing, that is happiness. Or you can call it peace or security, whatever you call it. We choose to call it happiness. That is the universal goal. Therefore, the sensible question that everyone must ask oneself, if I am trying to find happiness, if I am trying to get to happiness, I must know where it resides. Where is it? This question we take to ask. We ask many questions. Who created this world? who's my father's father's first mother, right? Etc. etc. Many questions you may ask. Really speaking, what am I interested in? Is that happiness? Where is it? Reside. Vedanta, which is the last portion of Vedas, declare that that happiness is your real self. Your true self is that happiness. It is within you. It is not without. Anywhere in the world, at any time, whosoever subjected their life to scrutiny have come to almost the same conclusion. After Sapnar from the West, German philosopher, he declares it is difficult to find happiness within, but it is impossible to find it elsewhere. It is difficult to find happiness within, but it is impossible to find it elsewhere. Like in many different words, everybody has almost declared the same thing, that happiness is within. Now the question is, how to go within? If it is within, what is it covered by? Again, we have to say, it is covered by various impurities, mala, at the gross level. The mala, various mala dirts are kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya. Kama means desire. Krodha means anger. Lobha means grief. Mada means arrogance. Then moha means delusion. Matsarya means envy or jealousy. Various dirts at the superficial level. Little deeper, mental disturbance, agitation, what they call it, vikshepa. If you go deeper, what is the final covering, the subtlest covering? Avaran, which means ignorance. So, Vedas provide solution to remove the obstacles. For mala, the solution that it gives is karma yoga. For Vikshepa, it is Upasana or Bhakti Yoga. For Avarana, it is Jnana Yoga. Right. So through Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Jnana Yoga, you remove the obstacle, then what remains is the self within, which is happiness. What they call it? Ananda. Like if there is so much of green mantle covering a pond, you won't see the moon reflected in it. Because the dirts are covering the pond, you don't see the reflection clearly, but otherwise you don't see it. You go on removing the impurities, the green matter, slowly, slowly the moon becomes, moon's reflection becomes clearer. When the green matter is completely removed, then the reflection becomes total. Right? So you have to remove the green mantle and the disturbance on the surface. When you remove that, without that you won't see it within. Therefore they said, if you wish to find the true happiness, you got to deal with your own mind. So that is why I say, if anybody asks you, what do you study in Gita, you tell them, mind your own business. Bhagavad Gita actually teaches us to mind our own mind. The mind is something that seldom minds itself. It wants to mind everything. It wants to know what is happening to some, what do you call, somebody's life. How does it matter to us what happens in Tom Cruise's life, Salman Khan's life? In our own life, what matters? We don't worry, right? We are interested in all these things. So if the mind, mala, vikshepa, ignorance are taken care of, then the atma from within is seen clearly.
Vikshepa
means agitation, disturbance.
So that is the second one. The mental disturbance is the second one. First is mal, you said, is the gross dirt.
Mal, the gross dirt.
Yeah.
The vikshepa, little subtler. The subtler dirt is?
Ignorance.
So you can't start from ignorance. You want to first remove the green mantle. Then take care of the disturbance. Then the still moon reflection you will see. But when you see the reflection, still the avarna is there. What? What is ignorance?
To recognize it.
That moon is within the water. But moon is far beyond. It is only reflected here. Real me, that example. So therefore, Karma Yoga is emphasized in the Bhagavad Gita in the first six chapters.
So is Brahman a reflection within or beyond?
Brahman is beyond. See, in fact, he will talk about all these things in the end of this chapter and in the beginning of the eighth chapter. He differentiates Brahman and Atma. Brahman, the totality, has reflected itself in the individual as Atma. So you can use the word similar, but use the word Atma with reference to individual, Brahman with reference to the total. So the moon, literally speaking, is beyond, is just reflected in the individual. So one reflection is Manjari, one reflection is Puja, one reflection is Lakshmi Narayan. Each one is a different reflection. But you got to go within to see it. You can't go without. But the mental impurity makes a person run outside. You go to anybody, everybody is so busy. Nobody has time. Right? Therefore, Vedanta says, let them run after what they are searching for. Don't disturb them. Vedanta Pasma, first of all, is not something that is to be given to the masses. For the mass, it is the Vedas. You may ask, sir, is the Vedanta part of Vedas? Of course. But when we say Vedas for the mass and Vedanta for the public, we mean the Veda Purvam, the beginning portion of the Veda, where it talks about fulfilling your desires. Even Swami Vivekananda said, you can't teach philosophy to a hungry soul. First you got to give them fish. Then you will have to teach them how to fish. Then he will understand that the true happiness that he is searching for, it may come in 20, it may come in 40, it may come in 80. It may not come. Right? But whenever that question comes, hey, I have been doing the same thing, routine. Right? Now, I have not got it. Now, where is it? You know, a colleague of mine, before he joined the ashram, he studied in the US. And then, I think it's the same company which he interviewed in, if I'm not wrong, PricewaterhouseCoopers. They have an office in Boston also, sir. I think he went to Boston. And they interviewed him. And he was almost selected. Right? So, usually these guys in the interview, I believe they ask, okay, we ask you a few questions. You want to ask anything now? You are almost in. They want to send you the letter officially. And if you want to ask anything, you can ask us. So this guy, his mother has been following Vedanta. So she has introduced him to Vedanta when he was young. So many times he has gone to the ashram and all that. So then he was exposed to this subject and he met Swamiji once or twice in US also in one of the lectures and all. So he got almost interested in getting into Vedanta course. So he asked the gentleman who interviewed him, yes, I have something to ask. Okay, what is it? You can ask him. So you won't mind anything if I ask you, right? Yeah, I won't mind asking. He said, are you happy where you are? Then you see the head in Boston, and then PricewaterhouseCoopers, boss of the Boston division. So he said, no, honestly, I would like to be in New York, controlling the other. So you wanna, so he said, I am going to join your division. Then I will be aspiring to come to your position. Then there also I am not happy. Then why should I come there and understand that there also people are not happy, then search for happiness, might as well go and learn that now. So he said, I am not taking your job, I am going to join the ashram. He joined the ashram, he studied there, then after a few years, Swamiji sent him back to US. Now he has gone there and he is lecturing. And he is lecturing all these people who apparently interpreted those things. So in other words,
Who is that person?
Gautam, a colleague of mine. So, you know, we have centers in different parts of the world. What I am trying to tell you is, it's nothing superior or inferior. The question is, very often our mind thinks, this is what I want, go on, let us just don't disturb yourself. In fact, it talks about how you can get it.
So are you saying you should learn to be content or find contentment?
In a way, you've got to ask yourself, where is that contentment? You come to your own conclusion. Vedanta is not saying you must take it as a gospel. In fact, in Vedanta, the total freedom is given. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita itself, we are studying now, after explaining everything to Arjuna, in Lord Krishna, in the 18th chapter, he says, Yata Aishyasi Tatapu. Yata Aishyasi Tatapu means, you do what you like. What you like means you think and decide what you think is right and you follow it. That freedom is totally given. In fact, before the class started, we had a small conversation. Sometimes this freedom is taken wrongly. In the sense, in other places, a kind of fanaticism is brought in. You've got to first preach, you've got to commit it. And if you go somewhere and it's wrong, etc., etc., it may have nothing like that. You must follow your reason. You must follow your logic. You must question everything. So for that, first you go, fulfill yourself. Even in Maslow theory, they say the same thing, right? First you got to take care of the basics. Like in Hindi they say, what is it? Roti, kapda, makan. That's what even Maslow theory says. First thing is, you got to have those things done. Right? Then slowly, slowly everything else will come. Then only you will be thinking about other things. Then you ask yourself, is it really there? Once that question comes, then you understand it is not there. You've seen it all. Very often people who talk, they don't talk philosophy, they philosophize. There is a notion of difference between a philosopher and those who philosophize. A philosopher doesn't philosophize. He doesn't justify. It's not like grape is soft for him. You understand? He has understood that it has something which it can give us. Like Swami Ramananda says, iron and gold is good for buying iron and gold. So Vedanta can say, yes, when you ask your question to Vedanta, is happiness in the world? Answer is no. When then Vedanta asks you another question, which not you don't ask usually. Generally people ask, is happiness in world? Worldly things? No. But they stop there. Vedanta asks you one more question. Isn't there in poverty? Is happiness there in poverty?
No.
So that also answers me. Please understand this. There is no happiness in money, agree. Nobody is denying it. But is there happiness in poverty? Money at least gives you options. Right? The option is you can sit and be disturbed in Delhi or you can go to Switzerland and be disturbed there. At least the option it gives you to deal with at the worldly level. Poverty doesn't give you that. So that is why when a person goes through all the life to some extent, then these things happen naturally to a person. When that happens, he questions. Then it says, see, the happiness is within you. It's covered by these things. You take care of this. Don't stop your actions. To find that, you don't have to give up your world. It's not the race. Giving up is not the solution. What is the solution then? Growing up. How do you grow up? Doing the same action, changing the attitude. That is Karma Yoga. Exactly what Sri Krishna told Arjuna. Don't have to run away from the battlefield. Battlefield means your daily routine duties. Whatever you are supposed to do, you do that. But changing your attitude. The West say, same thing what John F. Kennedy said. What did he say?
Ask not what your country can do to you.
That is what Karma Yoga is all about. Meaning, keeping aside your personal interest aside and rising to the level of nation or even beyond. If you are not able to help the nation, little lesser than that. But definitely beyond your selfish, self-centered interest. Think from the family point of view. Think from the community point of view. Think from the society point of view. Country point of view. Human beings point of view. Then all species point of view. That's Karma Yoga. Right? So when you do that, Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya, taken care of. But the general mind nature being restless, that continues. That is taken care of when you give it a point of direction. And that is through Upasana, meditation or Bhakti, devotion. Then the Avarna ignorance still lingers. That is removed through Jnana Yoga. So the first six chapters that we completed deals with in total. It talks about believing. It also has Jnana in it. But the emphasis is in Karma Yoga. And when you say Karma Yoga, what is it? Karma Yoga is individual's effort. Right? Individual will have to do the action. But changing the attitude. And when the individual does that action, changing the attitude, he becomes eligible to receive God's grace. God's grace is available to everybody. It is not specifically available to only few. Like sunlight is available to everybody. But if you have closed your windows and doors, you don't get the sunlight in. If you open the doors, sunlight comes in. So if your attitude is positive, you have opened your kitki, your windows, your doors, then that God's grace comes. Coupled with that, your effort fructifying to fruit. So in this middle six chapters that we have started now, from chapter 7, it is Upasana or Bhakti that is emphasized. So in this, he first verse number 1, chapter 7, he says, Lord Krishna speaks here. He says, Arjuna, I will give you both knowledge together with wisdom. Knowledge comes from external source. Wisdom comes from individual reflection. Wisdom cannot be given. But he says, I will give you knowledge together with wisdom. Who can give wisdom? Or closest to wisdom somebody can give only who has himself got wisdom. But only read from books. However much I may try, my communication will have limitations when I have not internalized the subject. When the very subject has been internalized, I have experimented with it, I have seen it. Right? Even in study they say, compared to reading or listening, visual effect is much more. You see it, it's much more effect on you. Much more than that, as kinesthetic, when you have yourself done it, right? Once you have internalized it, then you are not going to forget it. Then you will be able to bring it out according to the person to whom you are giving it. So the teacher should have two things. One is internalization of the knowledge and second is absolute love for the student. Love means what? What is love? Total identification. That's what love is. Love means identification. Oneness. Feeling of oneness. What pains you, pains me. What gives you joy, gives me joy. What is good for you, is good for me. That's love. Isn't it? So when the teacher has love, he sees from the student's level. He doesn't go and start talking everything that he knows to show that how much he knows. And he's not a true teacher. Then he scares the student that he gets jittery, he doesn't want to study the subject anymore. He thinks it's very difficult. If you see a good teacher, he'll come down, and when he comes down, supposing he's teaching 25 students. Where should we start?
At the lowest.
So you must take the lowest fellow into consideration. And you have to make sure that it's not boring to the brightest. Because if he goes too much to the lowest level, then brightest fellow gets bored, you know, because he knows. So you have to manage it there. So you have to identify and then communicate. So when he says, I will give you knowledge together with wisdom, he comes down to the level of Arjuna. Arjuna, you are a man of action. So you do not have that much time to contemplate. So I will make it as much elaborate as possible. So that you just have to do little bit effort. That you have to do. Without you doing it, you can never get wisdom. No Krishna, no Christ, no Buddha, no Muhammad can give you wisdom. It will remain their personal experience. You can read Bible, you can read Quran, you can read Gita, you can read anything. If you don't strive, you don't reflect, it will remain what? It will remain knowledge. It will never remain intuition. It will never become transformation. It will always remain an information. When you gain knowledge, it's burden. Because it's just in the form of memory in you. And memory is volatile. Wisdom is not volatile. And it's not burden, it's light. You carry some, you carry a tin box to your office. Heavy. Right? You eat the food in the during the lunch time and the food gets digested. That same food has gone into you and it has been distributed, digested. It's not heavy anymore. When the information goes in, when you put in the effort and digest it, it makes you light. That's why I said a philosopher is light. If you know only philosophy, you are stressed. There is difference. The proof of the pudding that you have got wisdom is in any situation you will be relaxed. Or to the extent you are able to be relaxed in any situation, to that extent you have internalized the knowledge. Then he says, which having known, there remains nothing more to be known. Once you gain this knowledge and internalize it, once you gain wisdom, thereafter there is nothing more remains to be known. When he says there is nothing more remains to be known, what is he trying to say? This is where a lot of confusion comes. In fact, the gentleman also, in a way, he didn't. I don't know whether he asked the question. If you go deeper, you will have the question. Probably he had didn't ask it. Contented. There is a subtle difference. Especially in the West, they find it very difficult to understand it. And in the East, they never bother to understand it. West is very comfortable with the word contentment. In fact, discoveries and inventions are possible only if you are discontented. Necessity is the mother of invention. Everything is provided and you will say, okay, chalo, let's play cards. Especially during Diwali time. You know, they'll be adored. Play cards. So the thing is, what is this contentment that he's talking about? When he says, having known there is nothing more remains here to be known. This needs to be understood correctly. What is he saying?
Ignorance is removed.
Yeah, nothing more here remains to be known means what?
You know Satchitananda, that's covered bliss.
You have to use the knowledge to gain the wisdom. So you have to practice it.
But having gained the wisdom, there is nothing serious that I will declare to you in full this knowledge. Together with wisdom, which having known, which having internalized, nothing more here means in this world remains to be known. Also the word knowledge and wisdom, he's going to explain that in verse number 4 and 5. Knowledge means the entire world. Wisdom means the sense that pervades the world. Knowing that the Atma or Brahman is that which pervades the entire world, you are that Atma, you are that Brahman. Thereafter nothing else remains to be known. What does it mean? It means once you attain Brahman, thereafter you will not have that insecurity anymore. See, you know you are in 9th standard. You see the fellow who is in 12th standard, comparing him, you feel you know less. Insecure. So you come to 12th, then what happens? Have you got security? You compare yourself with the graduate, I know less. Like that you can go on ad infinitum. How much ever you acquire, do you feel secure? You never feel secure.
Depends on your nature. Depends on your nature. You can feel content. You can feel that okay, I'm good, where I
am. You're good?
Where I am.
What is the proof of that contentment? Next question.
When I don't strive or when I don't get lazy, if I don't go down to summer. I'm
the
happy.
Proof of that contentment, I'm coming to that, is you will never stop contribution.
Never stop?
Contribution. Your action.
Correct.
See, please understand this. The contentment that a lot of people understand is a tamasic contentment. The moment they become contented at that level, they stop their action. When a person is full, is full of energy, that energy is now given into the universe. Are you with me? So that's what I'm saying here. When a person finds that absolute security, that he is Brahman, thereafter nothing stops him. Nothing prevents him. He becomes an open person. The difference is, before your actions are to find happiness. And once you find this contentment, thereafter your actions are out of contentment.
You are not looking for
results
anymore.
Nothing. You are Atma. You go freely. If you happen to be a Kshatriya in this world, but somebody who has found the source, for example, Sri Krishna, right? He essentially is a Kshatriya, but somebody who has gone to the source. Thereafter, when he goes to the battlefield, on the battlefield, he is not at all worried whether he is going to die, whether he is going to win, whether he is going to lose. He simply goes and it becomes a play for him.
Just an action without wanting results.
Exactly. Absolutely. Total. What I am trying to tell you is, when you come to this level, you gain that wisdom, you realize that you are that truth that is manifesting itself in this form, with the nature of talking or singing or dancing or Kshatriya, defense nature, whatever it might be, you will go about expressing it like trees express themselves, like anything in nature express itself. When a nightingale sings, a nightingale is not singing with some expectation that a passerby will stand and listen to it and probably reward it. When a rose gives fragrance, it's not having that intention that some passerby will appreciate it. There is no passerby, so therefore let me stop giving fragrance. Today there is so many people who have come here, so let me now release all the fragrance. Does it think like that? It goes about simply expressing its fragrance. So that's what he's saying. Having known that, there remains nothing else to be known. You become absolutely contented, whereby your expression becomes total, uninterrupted expression. That is why throughout the world, whether it is Jesus or Muhammad or anybody, they compared perfection to childhood. In Bhagavad Gita and in the Indian Veda, the tradition, they always compare a Mahatma to child. They say Bala Mahatma to a child. Child means what? Have you seen children? Bubbling with energy. But to cut the fuck, keep quiet. You cannot keep quiet. You understand? He just goes about acting, doing whatever, and then when the body becomes tired, in no minutes, the child goes to sleep. This is what he is saying. When you reach that state, thereafter there is no insecurity, then you have total contentment. You go about expressing yourself fully, whatever may be your nature. That's what Vedanta is saying. Your potential is now not expressed totally. Your potential is now limited. If you reach that state, you will be expressing yourself totally. You are not bothered whether people will, in history you will be remembered as good or bad or a king. If Krishna was bothered about this in history, whether they will remember him as good or bad, he wouldn't have gone to this battlefield at all. Many people criticize Krishna for asking Arjuna to fight, because of which so many people were killed. So you can say that Krishna was a mass murderer. You understand? He couldn't bother. He least bothered. Upanishadic masters, after having given their Upanishads, they didn't bother to put their name. No copyright to say. You won't even know who gave the Upanishads. They were only concerned about expressing it, sharing it, giving it. Out of happiness, they were acting. This is different from the contentment that India understands. What we call is pig's contentment. Pig's contentment is what? It remains in slush, dirt, and is very contented. Tamas, no expression, finds happiness in sleep. So he says, to come to this level, very few aspire. The third verse, amongst thousands of men, scarce one strives for perfection. How many is interested in going to the innermost potential? See, try to understand this with education. How many really go to the level of PhD? Throughout the world, if you see, many people don't even go to school. Few people who go to school, out of that, how many can cross elementary level? Then middle school, then high school, then higher secondary, graduation, post-graduation, PhD. How many go there?
Handful.
How many who go to PhD completed? Same thing is saying. Very few people aspire to tap their total potential. Little bit we gain, immediately we want to start class. Right? That's why I say, how many of you, when you go back home, do not lecture, I don't know. Just saying that, see, very often what happens, you know, sometimes when I go to their house, children are very agitated looking at me. That's how I come to know. Because, why? Because these people, parents, when they go home, they start giving them lecture. Whatever they heard in the class, they will go give lecture. So they say, boss, my father is coming back from my Vedanta class, so I want to get away from home. Because I don't want lectures, right? In the Bhagavad Gita also he says, do not lecture to the ignorant. And then he says what? Then what does he say? In chapter 3. Verse 26, chapter 3, what does he say?
Oh.
You can read the translation. Chapter 3. Read the translation.
let no wise man unsettle the minds of ignorant people who are attached to action. He should engage them in all action, himself fulfilling them with devotion.
Himself?
Fulfilling them with devotion.
Fulfilling them with devotion. What does it mean?
As in do a little.
Simply set an example. Don't lecture. When you go and set an example, it will inspire them to follow. If you lecture, nothing will happen. Right. Once you inspire them through your own example, over a period of time they will take that. So either among thousands of men, scarce one strives for perfection. Of those who strive and succeed, of those who strive and succeed in striving continuously, consistently, scarce one knows me in essence. See, in any field, nothing to do with the spiritual, any field, as you go a little deeper and deeper, encashing is what everybody will be tempted to. Encashing the tapas. Little bit you strive, you serve. What happens when you serve? Even in your own society, supposing you, small area maybe, right? 100 houses are there. You start working for everybody. Immediately, first thing is you become known in that area. Everybody will look up to you. They will say good morning to you when you walk. Right? Slowly, slowly. Very often you find people stop there and they want to encash that. Building up that ego. Seldom do you go
beyond that.
See, there amongst thousands who strive, they stop at some level. Very rarely you find a person who goes to the potential. That is why Swamiji gives an example of lake. When you are a student, he says you got to follow the example of a lake in this context. That is, what does the lake do? It simply goes on collecting water. It simply goes on collecting water. It doesn't go to the town and announce, you can come and collect water from me. All it does is, it goes on collecting water. The public, they go to the lake, draw the water. What do you mean? So therefore he says, your purpose in life should be to go deep inside and tap that ultimate source. Then automatically those who are interested will come to you. They will take it from you. That's a fact. How the whole thing happens. And that way, knowledge will spread. You got to go to the source. Now he's going to talk about the knowledge and wisdom that he said, no, I'll give you. He starts. In 4, he gives knowledge. In 5, he gives wisdom apparently. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu ho. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu ho. Kammano buddhi revacha. Kammano buddhi revacha. Ahankarayati yamne. Ahankarayati yamne. Binna prakriti rashtada. Binna prakriti rashtada. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu ho. Kammano buddhi revacha. Ahankarayati yamne. Binna prakriti rashtada. Bhumi, earth, apaha, water, analaha, fire, analaha means that which consumes, great consumer. How much ever you give, it keeps on consuming, it never gets satiated. Then come, space, why air, wind, come, space, mana, mind, buddhi, intellect, then ahankar, ego. This eightfold, he says, such is the eightfold division of my prakriti. Bhumi, prakriti means what? Nature. My, he says, my nature. what is this mind represent here?
A person, all human beings.
Shri Krishna is not talking here as Mr. Krishna. He is talking here as Ishvara, Lord, Brahman. Any soul who reaches that ultimate potential and realize that he or she is essentially divine, they speak from that level, not from the surface level. Right? They speak from that level. So when Jesus Christ said, come unto me, he is not saying come to Jesus. A lot of people think that they in fact probably interpret it also. Come to me means you have to become closer to Jesus, Christian. Jesus Christ was not even an ordinary member of Christianity. Isn't it? Christianity means what? Christianity.
Followers.
Followers of Christ. Right? Christ did not form any religion as such in that way. Isn't it? Nobody for that matter. Krishna, Muhammad, nobody. They gained the self-knowledge from that level. That's why he said, come unto me means, come to your own self. Come to your inner potential.
Look from within.
Like he said, hate the sin and not the sinner. Because when you go to the innermost core, you know that there is no sinner. Sin is at the superficial level. When you go deeper, you don't commit sin. Because when the awareness increases, can you keep your eyes open and fall into the pit? Difficult or impossible?
Suicide is that.
It's not that. Eyes open doesn't mean physical eyes I'm talking about.
Yeah. When they fall off, if their eyes open, they want to die. They're committing suicide.
When they commit suicide, are their eyes open really?
I think so.
I'm not talking about block, physical eyes.
Samaj.
When the fellow thinks correctly, when he sees, nobody can commit sin with awareness. You try it out. You try. If you can do that, you will change the entire philosophy actually. The mind has taken over. Kama has taken over. Krodha has taken over. Lobha has taken over. Right? So you see, why did I do that? You say that, no? Why did I do that? And you say, why did I do that? Means what? Where were you? When you did that?
Not in control.
You take the example of a guy who is wanting to commit suicide. Same fellow, supposing for some reason he took poison or whatever, he didn't die, let us say. Before that they saved him. After the message, did I do that? My God, I must have been an idiot. What was that? Was he aware?
Lack of awareness.
Nobody can commit sin with awareness. In fact, with awareness you can only serve. So what he says here is that Bhumi, earth, when he talks about earth, he is not talking about the gross earth. Please understand this. Gross earth has all other elements also in it. Agreed? Yes or no?
Yes.
What do we mean by that? All other elements in it.
Earth,
life. And when he talks about Bhumi, he is not particularly talking about gross earth alone. He is talking about subtle earth. What is the difference I am trying to explain?
Entire
prakriti. If you have done Atma Bodhana, it becomes a little easier to understand this. In Atma Bodhana, Adi Shankara explains this. He talks about Panchikarna in Atma Bodhana. What is Panchikarna talking about?
The Panch Bhoot, water.
The Panch Bhoota, Bhoota in its nascent pure form, pure earth, pure water, pure fire, pure air, pure space. So the earth that we see, the gross earth, is not pure. It has little portion of water in it. It has little portion of fire in it, warmth in it, little portion of wind in it, little space in it. Are you with me? This gross earth, gross air, gross water, gross fire, gross space has come from pure nascent elements going through the process of Panchikarna and coming into this form. He explains that. Supposing pure earth is there, from that one little portion goes and combines with fire, water, air and space. One half remains intact. The other half splits itself into four. In other words, one eighth of earth goes and mixes with water. One eighth of earth goes and mixes with fire. One eighth of earth goes and mixes with air. One eighth of earth goes and mixes with space. Similarly, all the other four. Thus, this process is called Panchikarna. And thus, the gross earth has come about. Gross, water, fire, all that has come about. And the subtle elements combining together forms thoughts. And when the thoughts, and the thoughts, when they are indiscriminate in nature, it's called mind. When thoughts are discriminate in nature, it's called
intellect.
When thoughts are arrogantly in nature, it's called as ego. Ahankar. Right? Thoughts are nothing but subtle matter. And the subtle matter may, when they are indiscriminate in nature, it's called as mind. Indiscriminate thought flow is called mind, manas. Discriminate thought flow is called as buddhi. And when the thoughts are arrogatory in nature, mind. My buddhi, my mind, my body, my children, my possessions, my book, my guru, my ashram, that my, the arrogating thoughts are classified as ahankar. He says all these eight put together is my lower nature. Such is the eightfold division of my faculty. This is what he calls as knowledge. He explained, knowledge means world. Everything that you could know objectively. Then what he calls as wisdom is that which can be known only subjectively. Objectively, earth, water, you know that you have a mind, isn't it? You know that you have intellect. You know that you have ego. All this can be objectively known. Everything that can be known objectively, he classifies it as prakriti, nature, or knowledge. Now, that which can be possibly known only subjectively, he's going to explain.
Aparejani tattvanyam, aparejani tattvanyam, prakritim buddhi me param, prakritim buddhi me param, jiva bhutam mahabaho, jiva bhutam mahabaho, yayedam dhaadyate jagat, yayedam dhaadyate jagat, aparejani tattvanyam, prakritim buddhi me param, jiva bhutam mahabaho, yayedam dhaadyate
hey Jagat, all this that I told you now, which one? All these eight are lower nature. This is lower. All these are lower. Apara. These are my apara prakriti. But different from it, something else different from it. O Mahabaho, O Mighty Ama. He is addressing whom by word Mahabaho? Arjun. What is Mahabaho indicating here? Strength. Strength means what? Don't just stop with knowledge. Go deeper. You have the strength to go within. O Mighty Ama, know my higher prakriti, higher nature. What is it? The life element by which this universe is supported. The life element by which this universe is?
This is the Chetana.
Chetana. Atma. Consciousness. Self. What you are conscious of is knowledge. The conscious principle is wisdom. What do you mean? All that you are conscious of is outside of you. The conscious principle is your essential self. That is the differentiation that he is trying to make here. Many of us stop at the worldly level. Very few try to go deep. A simple question, like, you know, you say that when two atoms of hydrogen combine with one atom of oxygen, it forms water. You find that it is not there. Next question is there. What is it? Who is made all these laws? You throw an object, it goes up. And it gets attracted to the earth through gravitational force. You do research, you do discover, and then come to this discovery and say, this is it. One more question, that is, who is behind it? Right? How does it happen? Go deeper and reach that conscious principle, then you have gained wisdom. So he says, that conscious principle is my higher self. Is my higher self means is the higher self in each and every being. So the consciousness is higher. Why is it higher?
The true name. Without it, nothing will function. So because that rest all is, this can be destroyed, and that is in this.
Correct. Let all else is something that can be destroyed, and consciousness remains ever. Then?
What is the question
here? Why is it called as higher?
Because that is the element behind everything.
That's the element behind supporting everything. So when you say supporting everything means what?
It's a strength, it's a foundation.
Foundation means what?
It's a base level on which anything is. So true.
Support means, understand this, satya. That which supports is not dependent on what it is supporting.
When the other thing is dependent.
That which is being supported is dependent on what is supporting it. What do you mean?
Yes.
So who is higher? The support is
supporter.
You understand? Why is calling it higher? See, this is how you should reflect. Right? In a way, you should ask this question. Why is he calling this as lower? Why is he calling that as higher? In everything, what is higher, what is lower? That which is dependent is lower. In a relationship between parents and children, if children are dependent on parents, then children are lower. If parents are dependent on children, then parents are lower.
when the roles reverse, then nature also reverses. When the children are young, then you are stronger. When the children grow up and the parents get old, then the children get strong. But I would think the parents that time know.
Provided the inner is strong. We are not talking about physical here. If the inside is strong, and when children also grow up and when their inside is also strong, two highers will be relating with each other.
Yes, there is nobody really dependent on you.
That is the ideal condition. That is what Vedanta is saying. Each and every one of us here, if we will go and identify with the higher within, then in all our relationships, we will be identifying and relating from the level of higher. You will relate, you will do everything, you will explain everything. But if nobody understood, you will not go back dejected. You understand? You go about doing your work without dependent on the outcome of the work. If Bhagat Singh was dependent on the outcome of the work, he would have functioned like that, the way he functioned. Are you with me? They are functioning at a higher level. They are inspired. You say, no, oh my God, this fellow is inspired. Inspired worker. Who is an inspired worker? The guy who works in the office for incentive, is he inspired worker? He is dependent on the incentive. Isn't that carrot that is dangling in front of him, he is dependent on it. But a guy who goes to the office, who is working inspired, he is not dependent on the outcome of the work. See, you must try to bring what they are saying here to a level where you belong to, then you benefit from it. Otherwise, too much of Sanskrit, you talk and listen, it will very, very intellectual, scholarly, but you go back home with nothing. So when he says lower and higher, what does it mean? It means this, that higher means not dependent. Without depending, supporting. If your support is with the dependent, conditional, then you are not higher. What do you mean? You are my son, I will support you, but on condition, what? When you grow up, you should support me. That means you are not being that support from the higher. Any relationship, even if one is relating from higher, the relationship will be better. And the relationship will be fantabulous. Both are relating with each other from higher. What do you mean? There is no expectation in return. There is only contribution. Supplementing and complementing each other without being dependent on the outcome. It's a very fascinating level to reach. It takes time. It can only happen by self-reflection. So this higher self is not dependent on the lower self, but lower self is dependent on the higher. Now with reference to wave and ocean, who is higher, who is lower? Ocean is higher. Waves are lower. Waves are dependent on the ocean. Ocean is not dependent on the waves. Now with reference to dream and wakened mind, which is higher, which is lower?
The mind. Because the mind is the one.
Mind is what?
The one which is causing the dreams.
No. You will state it fully. The mind means mind is lower or higher?
Mind is not heavy.
Higher. The entire waker mind comes from, evolves from, sorry, entire dream evolves from waker mind. Isn't it? Your friends, you, your friends, your enemies, the flora, the fauna, everything in the dream has come from your own mind. Yes or no? The entire pluralistic variety, including the dreamer of the dream world, has come from one waker's mind. Is the waker's mind dependent on the dream, or the dream dependent on the waker's mind? Dream is dependent on the waker's mind. So who is lower, who is higher in this? Dream world is lower, waker's mind is higher.
So therefore he calls it as Paraprakriti and Aparaprakriti. Therefore now, if you have only knowledge, you will continue to be
Apara.
Apara means continue to be dependent. How do you know whether you've got wisdom? I told you, if you have studied Bhagavad Gita and you have gone through Bhagavad Gita, but you did not have the Bhagavad Gita go through you, right? Then you will conduct weekly classes. But as far as your life is concerned, you will continue to be dependent. A guru dependent on shishyas. Right? Then what? A guru is not your guru. Take the example of Galileo. When the whole world, what did Galileo say?
Sun is the center.
Sun is the center.
The earth is not the center of the world.
Huh?
These are the deities.
Earth is not flat. It's round. Earth is not flat, it's round. And you know what happened then? The stone. He was not dependent on the mass opinion. In other words, if you reflect on this, you will come to the conclusion what he is trying to say, Krishna, here. Let the whole humanity have their own opinion. You through self-reflection come to your conviction. You must operate on conviction. One who operates on conviction is higher. Even if he happens to have a wrong conviction, he is better than a fellow who follows right opinion. Will you agree or disagree? Why?
Because he's not dependent on validation from outside. He should have another person to tell him. He's sure of himself. If this is what I think, this is what I'm going to ask. My action is not dependent on what you think of me.
How does he become right?
How does he become right?
Just think about it. I'm trying to reflect on these two verses rather than just explaining it from a superficial level. I'm saying, having your own conviction, even if it is wrong, is higher compared to not having your own conviction but following others' opinion, even if it happened to be correct. Why?
Because he is not dependent on the others.
So what happens? As a result of which, how his life gets enriched?
Because if he is wrong, he will find it out himself. He is not blindly following others. He will find the truth ultimately because he...
So when you follow others' opinion, you are sleepwalking. When you are following your conviction, you are walking. Are you with me? Immediately you course correct yourself. When you walk following others' opinion, you are living your life like a plastic flower. Plastic flower is not subjected to danger, right? It remains for days, but it remains plastic. But you go and see in the garden, the fresh flower, it is subjected to very many challenges. So you got to ask yourself, is my life a plastic flower or fresh flower?
Right? Even in Bhagavad Gita, you like to follow others' lecture rather than your own conclusions through reflection. So higher nature, lower nature. Main difference is this, that higher nature is satya, mithya is dependent on satya, satya is not dependent on mithya. Now in the next word is it, the satya itself has pervaded itself in the mithya.
Guru ji here in this word, when he talks about his prakriti, those eight things, so what he has created, they also have the same prakriti, we also have the same eight things.
अहम कृष्णस्य जगतः प्रभव प्रलयस्तता भूतानि सर्वाणीच्युपकारय अहम कृष्णस्य जगतः प्रभव प्रलयस्तता. नो दिस टू बी द रूट ऑफ ऑल बीइंग्स. आई एम द ओरिजिन एंड डिसोल्यूशन ऑफ द होल यूनिवर्स. इन अदर वर्ड्स व्हाट ही इज सेइंग इज द हायर एंड लोअर relating with itself has manifested as the entire universe. The conscious principle enlivening the eightfold lower prakriti has come as the entire universe. In fact, the lower has actually come from the higher. And then, see, it's like this. It's a little difficult to explain this, but what he's saying is, due to the sun's heat, the water evaporates from the ocean. And then the water molecules are there in the air, in the atmosphere. Sunlight, the heat, the sunlight passes through those water molecules. And when the light, due to which the water is evaporated and the water molecules have come about, and the light is passing through that, and because of this, what phenomenon takes place?
Rainbow.
Is there rainbow?
No, it's an illusion.
But you are seeing it, no? When you see it's there, but when you probe, it's not there. Are you with me? Similarly, due to the ignorance of the consciousness, the elements have come about and the consciousness supporting it from within, the manifestations have come about. I don't want to leave you with this thought. So that you reflect on it.
Repeat the last line.
Due to the ignorance of the consciousness, the very elements have come about and the consciousness illumining the elements, the gross world has come about.
That is the Maya.
Maya. Just think about it. And that's why I give you the example. Due to sun's heat, the water evaporates. And the water molecules have come about. And the light which has been heating the ocean passes through the molecule. Then the rain there comes. So he says, this entire universe has come about by the play of higher and lower. Just let's leave it at that. Think about it. We'll meet again on Thursday, right?
16th. पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते. ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति. कायेन वाचा कायेन वाचा मनसेन्द्रियैर्वा मनसेन्द्रियैर्वा बुद्ध्यासनावा बुद्ध्यासनावा प्रकृते स्वभावात् करोमि यद्यत् करोमि यद्यत् सकलं परस्मै सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयामि
नारायणायेति समर्पयामि।